When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Offman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. And it is our pleasure now to be joined by my good friend John Keim, Commanders reporter for ESPN.com and, of course, host of the John Keim Report podcast. You can get anywhere you get your pods and on YouTube as well. Cakes, how we doing?
What up, Craig? How are you?
I'm great. It's always great to have you. And let's start off today. There's so much to get to, so many different things news-wise, some analysis stuff we can get into in terms of where the Commanders are and where they're headed. But you broke the news late last week that John Allen might actually return this season, that as you reported, the pectoral tear was only a partial tear. And lo and behold, they open up his 21-day window today, and he is back out there at practice. Do you, I guess the first question would be, when do you expect to see him? And then the follow-up to that would be, once he's out there, what kind of role would he play?
So the scenario that was always kind of presented to me would be practice this week and next week, and then return for the Atlanta game, giving him two games to get ready. And for what they hope, of course, is the playoffs. Now, I think that's more as much his preference. I think, you know, I'm sure the team would like, first of all, they got to make sure that he's ready in their minds. But I think the ideal scenario for him is what I laid out. And so that's kind of what I'm expecting, but that's not a guarantee. Maybe it could go to the last game, but I definitely expect him to play this year. So that's why they opened the window.
So with him, I think it's interesting because
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but you asked what role. That's a good question that I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
What I do know is that, you know, Johnny Newton certainly has some really good moments. And other moments, it's like he's still learning. He's a rookie. And there's situations where you're learning how to play double teams consistently, et cetera, that John Allen knows how to do. And I would anticipate when he gets back to where they need him to, that he would get back in as a starter. And then it just puts Newton in a position where maybe you can create some situations for him, like where they can use those three defensive line sets, right? Or three defensive tackle sets. Or you can get him maybe in some more pass rush situations and let him just kind of get to the quarterback, that kind of stuff. So anyways, I don't know that for sure, Craig, but that's what I would think would be the case.
Right. And well, that's what I was going to also say is they really struggled when he was in the lineup earlier this season. He, like Duran, like Johnny, is an undersized guy, really explosive, can get in the backfield, good penetrator. I think John's a little less twitchy, but also understands leverages and things a little bit more than those other two. But the fit was certainly something that was causing problems. Now, it's been overall better. That doesn't mean that he wouldn't have also gotten better as the season when he learned the technique.
He was not the problem.
Right. So there's a counterfactual here. I'm not trying to imply that, like, take out John Allen, it's better.
Right.
But the idea that, like, sometimes pairing Duran with a Sheldon Day or a Carl Davis, that has been something that I think has been beneficial. So as they figure out Fadarian Mathis and whether, I feel like he might not even last the season if they have to bring John back and there's a roster move, and this combination of D linemen that they have, you know, when you've had conversations with folks around the building about Allen, about what he was earlier this season, and about this theoretical comeback, has that entered the equation at all?
Yeah, I don't know that we've gotten that deep. I do, like, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with him, though, right? Because, obviously, you know, he's going to be entering a key offseason. So I think for him it's a good thing to come out and show what you can still do coming off an injury. You know, he doesn't have the guaranteed money. You could save $17 million by cutting him. Or if he goes out there and he looks good, you can always extend him and lower the cap hits too, right? Because this is a place that he wants to be, and this is a place, you know, they're finally winning and doing all that. And you know, the other thing is too, and it's, I know that with he and Duran, I think they had a couple really good years, and so you got used to that. And there is an adjustment anytime there's a new system, and what they're asking them to do. And I know, like, the run defense, it was not all because of the tackles. Far from it. It was a combination of many things. You know, sometimes it's guys trying to go behind blocks, underneath blocks, and creating wider gaps. Sometimes it's, you know, a little bit of hesitation, knowing which gap or you know, the gap is wide for a safety to come up and fill, et cetera. So there are a lot of things that went into it. And, you know, so it wasn't just as simple as, oh, this guy or that guy or these two. But... you know, I think the other thing, Craig, that what it gives you is just the depth. I mean, you're adding another quality defensive tackle late in the year, right after adding a really good starting corner, in Marshawn Lattimore. So it strengthens your defense. It gives you more depth at a position. And, you know, you don't have to play, you know, like you have Carl Davis who's out there playing instead of Fadarian Mathis. Maybe you don't have to play him because you've got John Allen coming in, right? So I think it strengthens you, period.
And getting stronger in December, good. Unfortunately, there are also some guys going out the other end of the revolving door. John Keim, Commanders reporter, ESPN, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Did we learn anything new today as you guys talked to Quinn and the team was back at practice about Zach Ertz? And actually, let's just start with Ertz. And then, you know, did we learn anything new about Ertz? And then with a full week to prepare, how do you think they go about replacing all the things that he does?
So with Ertz, no, we don't hear anything because he's in that concussion protocol. You know, it's hard unless you see them out there, and we did not see him out there, did not see him in the locker room. Saw Jeremy Chinn, who also had a concussion, who's in that protocol, but he was on the field. He was, you know, he went through warm-ups, and then he went to a side field, saw him in the locker room. So, you know, if you're going to be optimistic about one of the two right now, it would be him. But, you know, with concussions, it's tricky, and so we'll learn a lot more about both of them on Friday. And as far as replacing Ertz, they don't have a tight end on the roster who can replace him. And, you know, it's funny because I was just watching earlier today, going over how Philadelphia defended their passing game and just, you know, watching how Jane was against them. And Zach Ertz, like, there's still some things, some routes where it's subtle movement to create an opening, right? And he has that. He presents a good target for Jaden Daniels. Now, could some of these other guys get there? Like, I don't think they have a tight end like him on there as a pass catcher. And could Ben Sinnott get there? Maybe. But that's, as you know, I think you and I were talking about that. Like, it's not necessarily his style, right? I think you can do more. But I think the way you try to replace the production is not so much to try and replicate what he does, but then maybe go in a slightly different direction, right? And what do these guys do well? Sinnott and John Bates, you know, Bates is a good blocker, and I think Sinnott is getting there, right? So, like, you can use two tight end sets to do that with the occasional pass, but maybe different. But you also have, like, do you use Deonte Brown, Zaccheaus, maybe K.J. Osborne a little bit more, or two running back sets? So I think it's just more about diversity, you know, finding more what you can do, not to replicate Zach Ertz, but to maybe, like, what else can you do with the talent you have? And so I think it's more about that rather than saying, okay, can you ask Ben Sinnott to do what he does? Well, he's not Zach Ertz, you know? And I think that savviness that he has as a route runner shows up. There's a couple routes that he ran the other against the Eagles. The first time, I'm like, it's just a little bit, it's more, you know, and it's the right, like, it's a good route by a veteran tight end. Just kind of get him to widen and cut back inside. He caught a touchdown pass that way. He caught a couple passes that way, but one was a touchdown, right? And he'd get the defensive back to kind of bite on something. You know, and so now the other thing you can do with it, Craig, is there are a couple of passes he had in that game which played off Terry McLaurin. So can you put a Ben Sinnott or a John Bates in position to run some of those routes? Yeah, you can, because that was dependent. Like, there were sometimes they'd widen their drops to get to focus on McLaurin, creating an opening in the slot, much like we saw. Like, you know, some of those little hitch routes, right? Jamison Crowder had one the other day. They love those hitches. And that's something you can do by playing off of others. So there's ways to you know, get production still. And then the other thing is you have a really good quarterback who can make plays. That helps.
Yeah, that guy's pretty solid. You highlighted quite a bit of that on your podcast today. I love the title. Number five's pretty good. That's the title of the latest episode of the John Keim Report, which you can check out anywhere you get your pods. Of course, read John's work on ESPN.com. Keim with us here on The Hoffman Show.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
To your point, like, I think Crowder becomes really important. You need a guy that can win quickly. Like, you can use him, you know, some of the blocking stuff where it's like, we don't need our best blocker, but we need a guy to get the job done, where Ertz might have done that. KJ Osborne actually is pretty good at that stuff. But I think the big question folks have for someone like you, Cakes, is, okay, what Ben Sinnott was a second-round pick. Like, why can't he do this stuff? What's the feeling in the building around Sinnott? What can he do at this point? And where do they hope to see him grow to so that if he is, you know, like number one tight end next year or is playing with somebody next year as a 1A, 1B, that his role, it can be much more expanded as a guy that's now, what, 15 games into his NFL career?
Well, when they got him, too, remember, like, a lot of it was his versatility and just being able to run routes from different spots out of the backfield and then in line and all that. It's just that, you know, from the time we started watching him in training camp, it's not like there's been you can see the learning curves, right? And because he's not – this is not to – I don't know that he has a skill set to just be a dynamic player right away, if that makes sense, right? Like, he can help them, and he is, because he's playing. And so he does help them. But as a pass catcher, I think he's going to probably have to learn a little bit more about maybe, like, again, how do you create openings for yourself on these kind of routes? And he's not going to win sudden like a Jordan Reed once did, right? You know, that's just not his game. So how do you start to create that? And I think for him, it's going to be an accumulation of experience to help with that, and then get put in position. So maybe this week, because you don't have Ertz, he gets put in position more to do some of that stuff. And then we get to see that. And I think, like, in college, he was really good at running after the catch, but you get him into an open space situation and he can be a little bit more powerful. And I think, you know, so, but again, like, with I watch a guy like Ertz, and where the – they always talk about how friendly he is for a quarterback because of how he presents himself, right? Knowing when to sit in his spot and all that. Those are things that Sinnott can learn. And so I'll be curious to see how he does do and what they do to help, because Ertz has been a really good security blanket for Daniels. And I just think that's, you know, it doesn't mean they can't get production out of the tight ends. I mean, they got some out of Bates in that game. And, you know, and in other games, like, you can certainly ask more from Sinnott in the past game. But I just don't know, is he that, you know, he's not that dynamic guy who's going to make that instant impact as a pass catcher. It doesn't mean he's not going to develop into that. But right now, I think he still has to learn.
We don't need to do a whole Tyree Jackson bit, but, like, is that just another body, or is he someone that could actually be called up? The former college quarterback, for the listeners who may not know, former college quarterbacks, played 3 years in the league, hasn't been on a team this year. He's like 26 years old, but they signed him to the practice squad yesterday. Is he someone even worth, like, noting?
Yeah, well, I think it'll be interesting, because if you want to have three tight ends, like, then you may need to do that. And, Colson Yankoff's on IR, so, like, there's, you may have to do that. So we'll see, and I think it certainly speaks to perhaps with Ertz what might be the case on Sunday. And so, yeah, not sure yet, though.
All right, TBD. On the defensive side of the ball, Jeremy Chinn, as you said, maybe a little bit ahead of Zach in that he was at least out and around today. But I thought it was really interesting in the game, and John, we texted a little bit about this, but we can bring this conversation to the air, that Derek Forrest was in there instead of Percy Butler as first the third safety for a fair amount of sets. And then once Chinn went out, like, he was the full-on replacement, which was definitely interesting in terms of then some of the coverage situations those guys were in and whatever. Has that been something that you've been able to chase down any more information talking to some folks? And I guess then I'll ask you, if you haven't had any more information from talking to folks yet, like, what did you make of kind of how they're deploying their safeties and what changes if Chinn is out on Sunday?
Well, and that's a good question, too. And one thing I will say this, and credit to Derek Forrest, because, and this is something I was talking to him about today, is, you know, you go from sitting all year, like, we know the guy has a lot of passion for football. It is really hard to sit there and watch all the time, right? And when you want to be playing, and so I give him a lot of credit because he seemed to go in and do a pretty good job, and, you know, he was ready for his opportunity, and, like, you know, he told me he shed a tear after that one because of what it meant for him to be back on the field. Like, it's not just about money for these guys. Like, they want to play. So I give him a lot of credit for staying ready and being ready for his opportunity. So and moving forward, like, that is a loss for Jeremy Chinn. And part of it too, Craig, and I don't know, again, we don't know his status, but where you saw him the other day helping, for example, was with Marshawn Lattimore. There were a couple times where I saw it rewatching the game where he's like, he is motioning to Lattimore about, like, okay, they motioned to this, you know, hey, come over here, get this guy, whatever. There were a couple times where he did that, and Lattimore played it very well because of that, right? I mean, in part because he's really good, but partly because of Chinn getting him in the right spot, or at least telling him, you know, this is, boom, you know, this is what we're doing here, whatever. And so you lose that with him out. Now, Quan Martin is an outstanding communicator as well. But you like to have, not that Derek Forrest isn't, it's just that Chinn has been really good in that area, and he's been playing, so he knows, right? So I think, like, you would miss that for sure.
This Eagles matchup this weekend, I think there's one huge factor on each side of the ball that if I'm a Washington optimist, I look at and go, that could change it in our favor, and that could change it in our favor. On the offensive side, it's, we have a full week of preparation. If I was preparing for a Vic Fangio defense as a rookie quarterback, having to do it on a short week is an absolute nightmare. And that's what happened last time for Jaden Daniels. Now they have a full week. That is obviously very helpful. Marshawn Lattimore being able to cover A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith and then devoting extra resources to the other and having an absolute legit number one shutdown corner, that is also an enormous factor against a Philadelphia Eagles team that might have the most talented offensive roster in the NFL. How much do you buy stock in either or both of those things this weekend?
Oh, for sure. Like, first of all, like, Lattimore, I mean, the Saints didn't, the Saints barely looked at him, Craig. Like, there was one pass where I'm like, okay, you have your guy here. But they looked over there at Lattimore's side, and they just went the other way. Because, you know, I don't think the Eagles are going to do that. I think they would challenge him more. But I think that is a really good – this is a really good game for a guy – to have a guy like Lattimore. And, you know, just a little aside, like, I don't know how much you were able to watch him, but I was really impressed with how patient he played. And there were a couple times where, like, just watching him, how he anticipated routes based on situations, based on game situation, et cetera, like, was impressive. And the way he – there were a couple times where just mirroring – he's in press coverage and mirroring the feet of the receiver. Because of that, you're not getting turned around. Do you know what I mean? So, like, it was just impressive to watch. So you add a guy like that, it's always going to help.
For sure. I'll let you get on the Jaden thing in a second, but just on that point on Lattimore before we lose it, there's a third down late in the game that Sainer still gives up.
Third and one.
Yeah. And it's like, it's third and one. There's like 40 seconds to go. Just don't give up the touchdown.
That's what I'm talking about.
But, like, you watch Lattimore on the other side, and Lattimore's not giving up the first down nor the touchdown.
So I'm going to geek out on this one because I pointed this out, like, after the, you know, when I do my game review on Tuesday for Tuesday morning, like, I put up a clip of that play for the exact reason you said. And it was a great concept to watch because it's basically a mirror concept. The receivers are running the same route on each side. So you get a chance to see how both corners play it. And that's what I was talking about, like, the play where he played the route, whereas, you know, Samuelson was playing the play, right? And I even talked to Mike about that. I'm like, and he noticed how Lattimore plays. Like, it's not a knock on Samuelson. It's a credit to the experience of Lattimore and how he played it and why. And what you saw on that play is basically, you know, they are both about the same yardage off the ball. And at the snap, Lattimore kind of takes a step back, but then he starts to shuffle to the outside because he's anticipating the out route. Why? Because of the time remaining and the situation. So you're going to get a quick out because you don't want to use the clock. And, you know, and so that's what he anticipated. He breaks about – so when he's ready to break on his guy, he's actually 2 yards closer to his guy than what Samuelson is. And Samuelson was more backpedaling. Again, not knocking him. It's just the difference. And it shows – and that, you know, then he broke on the ball. Now he wasn't able to get there. It was like a 7-yard gain. But that's something where he can learn from that. The other thing is, I will say, like, I think that may have been the only catch against Samuelson all day. So, like, those corners did a really good job. And I want to make sure I point that out about him. But I found it, again, you did too. You geek out on stuff like that because it really highlights that guy is smart and he's just a different corner.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's so validating because I feel like so often we're just like, why can't you play up more on that? Like, why do you have to play? And, like, sometimes, you know, corners have to be on different levels and, you know, you don't want guys running into each other. And there's all kind of reasons why defenses and defensive backs play press versus off coverage in combination with their teammates on any given play. But it often just feels like I'm taking crazy pills, watching guys play 10 yards off on 3rd and 5 and give up a quick hitch or a quick out. And you're just like, but that's what they need right there. And so to see a guy like Lattimore just do it, I'm like, aha, it can be done.
And he also was like, they both were about 6 or 7 yards off their guy. It's just that he was more, again, took a kind of a little of a step back, but he was more balanced and positioned, ready to pounce on the ball. So when his receiver's breaking, he's already breaking on him. So if the ball is thrown to him, he probably breaks it up. And whereas, like I said, you know, Samuelson was a few yards back and not, you know, he had to kind of, when he lurched back a little bit to plant and go forward, it's just the difference. And again, it's not to pick on him. It's to say, like, that's a good lesson for someone else to say, like, oh, that makes sense. Now I get, you know what I mean? I understand why he did this. Now I can incorporate that to my own game.
For sure. And it's a great thing for Mikey to have as an example in the room. All right, on the Jaden front, getting a second crack at Eagles defense, how do you feel about that? And also, I'll add in one other element to this, John, because we're getting shorter on time here, and this may actually be the more important thing. The O-line had its worst outing of the season, arguably, against the Saints, certainly as a run-blocking unit. How confident are you that they can flip that around with Tyler Biadasz back in the fold and a full week of practice together where the center that practices all week actually plays on Sunday?
Yeah, and and that makes it different. But that's not to say that Geeter was to blame for everything. It certainly wasn't, because there are a lot of missed blocks on that front, and I thought the Saints were just the more physical team that day.
Yeah,
and I think that made a big difference. And it's just, it sounds basic, but it's really true. But like against the Eagles front, like Jalen Carter is a problem for any offensive lineman. So you've got to be better there. But I think having a healthy Jaden Daniels, I think in that game, because it's a short week, again, you're, like you said, you're facing a coordinator. They probably did more post-snap rotation on him than most other teams that I've seen. Now, I could be wrong in that, but they seem to do it a lot. And, you're showing this, you're showing that, and then you're getting to this. And so I think they had a really good plan for him. They also had a really good plan against Terry McLaurin. Since that game, McLaurin has been moved around, certainly not a ton more, but enough more, but also not just moving around, but getting targets on the other side. That's key, because early in the year, he was lining up on the other side at times, rarely getting a target. So that's been a change too. So Daniels, I think there are a couple keys. One, it looks like whatever was not so much bottom. Listen, you played some really good defenses. Philly's a really good defense. Pittsburgh's a really good defense. And then you're dealing with, a body that's probably, feeling the rigors of an NFL season. You had the rib injury. You're missing practice time. There were throws that he was making. It's like your rhythm isn't there. You're off target here and there. So there were throws that he normally makes that were just a little bit off. And for whatever reason, right? So I think, I think we've seen a different Jaden Daniels the last couple of weeks. That should help. I think that's going to be a big deal. The ability to threaten in multiple ways with him. But to me, if you don't get that run game at least going to a decent degree, it's going to be really tough. So that goes back to the line. And Biadasz is a guy, I had someone who had been here tell me, like, that was a huge signing to get that guy, and like how well he's actually playing. And you talk to guys around him, like, he's very smart, but he also, like, as one lineman told me, he battles his ass off to get in front of guys, like, and that's what you need. So I think having him, and just how much he helps with protections, identifying fronts, you don't see them get fooled a lot when he's in there. And I think there's a reason for that. So that's going to help, because you need to get that going in order to really kind of, you don't want to have Daniels have to drop back 40 times a game or 40 times in that game to beat them. But I think he's in a good position to be more effective than he was the first time around, even with Noah Brown out.
Yeah,
Eckler and Ertz.
Right. But he does have Brian Robinson back.
Let me stop there.
Yeah, didn't have B-Rob in that first game.
Correct. And, like, he also, he's also just seeming more himself. Like, maybe almost I think it's too simplistic to say it was just the ribs or this or that. I think your body's going to feel the rigors of an NFL season. You had just played a physical game against Pittsburgh, and then you are sore. Then you did have to deal with that. Then you miss practice time. Then it's like there's a grind of an NFL year for him that just adds up. I kind of think he almost feels refreshed at this point, and I'll be curious to see how that plays out in the game. But this will be a fascinating matchup, because it's the first time we see him a second time against a really good defense. He faced the Giants twice, but, like, they're not the same caliber of the Eagles. But I think there are some things that I'll be curious what Cliff Kingsbury does to also adjust to what we saw in that first game.
John Keim, everybody. ESPN.com is where you can read his work. You can listen to the podcast, The John Keim Report, wherever you get your pods. It's also on the Empire Media YouTube page. You might just see a familiar face there sometime, next
there
weekish
you
or so.
There you go.
Cakes, always appreciate you, sir. Thanks so much.
Right,
have a great holiday, and I'll see you Sunday.
Thank you. You too.
See All
you.
Right. That's John Keim, everybody, with us here on The Hoffman Show. When we get back, we're actually wrapping up the show. That's it. That's all. Real Things is next. We got Virginia Tech Hoops coming a little bit later, 6:15. Pregame begins here on the Team 980.